ready to go. Chad Holmes Show continues here on Bull Falls Radio. I'm Bob Look, sitting in for the vacationing Chad Holmes, and we get together usually on Tuesday mornings at this time of the show at a little after 9:06. We get to talk to Chad Delly from the Marathon County Library. First, welcome. It's the first time I had a chance to meet you.
Yes, exactly. It's nice to meet you.
And I love, well, the main library I don't get to very often. I live in Rothschild, but that place, you know, I'm quite often opportunity to do so and use their services.
It's a busy branch,
It is, and it's very nicely laid out, too. The folks who work there do a good job, and they're very friendly and very thoughtful. And
should be
proud of them.
Yeah,
you've got a lot of great things that the community can take advantage of, or what are some of the programs or things you got coming up?
Lots of events coming up over the next couple of weeks, but especially over the next week and a half, doing a bit on the eclipse, some eclipse-themed programming, including tomorrow night. We have Dr. Aaron Steffen, who is with the UWSP Physics and Astronomy Department, and understanding is used to run the planetarium here at the UWSP at Wausau campus. He's going to be coming in and doing a talk on the 1919 solar eclipse, which I guess was a pretty big deal because it was used in part, or it was helped prove Einstein's theory of relativity. So there was something going on there. I don't quite know the story, but people can come in and hear the story of how that all came about. That'll be tomorrow night here in Wausau at 6:30. We have some other eclipse things going on, like chalk art at a bunch of the different locations this week and next week. We have here in Wausau on Thursday, the 28th at 6 o'clock, CD eclipse art. So a lot of us older staff members have CDs, compact discs that we're not using anymore. So we're handing them over and letting some teens at our Wausau location create some art with them, CD eclipse art.
Boy, I'll tell you what, I've got several boxes there.
Yeah, me too.
Welcome to that.
Me too. Someday
I still use them, though.
Someday you might. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so we have, otherwise, we have next week going on at some different locations, an eclipse scavenger hunt in some of the libraries, Athens, Hatley, Rothschild, Spencer, Stratford. And then we have a craft program next Thursday at our Mosinee and Rothschild branches, eclipse viewers. So we're going to be making some eclipse viewers out of cereal boxes and some other supplies.
I'm going to go back to my grade school days where we wanted to see an eclipse and where you have a box and then like a little pinhole.
Exactly.
And you just take the shadow on the other one and it just projects the eclipse.
Somehow it works.
Yeah. Somehow it works.
Exactly. Yeah. So that'll be the kind of thing that we'll be doing. But yeah, otherwise we definitely have some non-eclipse programming going on. Let's see. We've got, this is a fun one at our, you mentioned the Rothschild branch, Rothschild Thursday, this coming Thursday, they're going to be doing a live clue game. So, people take roles and new parts and kind of a live mystery program. We are asking folks to register for that one. So you can call the Rothschild branch 715-359-6208. I'm not sure if they're full yet, but that would be should be a fun program. And also coming up, an interesting one this Saturday, local premiere of the documentary Honor in the Air, written and directed by Susan Reitz, and it's all about Captain Scott Alwyn from Wisconsin and his story. So we're going to be showing the documentary, and Susan will be there to answer questions afterward. And it should be really interesting. I'm expecting a big crowd for that one. So that'll be here in Wausau, and that gets underway at 1 o'clock on Saturday. Yep.
You know, it's one of those things that when you say library, when you associate, you know, location, library, sometimes the people think that all you can think of is books.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And it's so much just the tip of the iceberg of what your local library can do and service with you.
Yeah, we try. excuse me. We have space to do programming, and some of our locations are in their village offices, and there's community space there that we're able to take advantage of for programming. But yeah, we put a lot of emphasis on programming as a way to draw people into the library, connect with each other and have fun and learn some things. And whether it's crafts or scholarly talks like the one we'll have tomorrow night in Wausau, yeah, we try to mix it up a bit as far as programming goes. But yeah, there's a lot more public computers and Wi-Fi and just, of course, and just places to come on in and get work done, whether it's studying or using a study room that we have here in Wausau, all sorts of stuff.
And yes, the library still have books.
Absolutely, yes. Yes, we are buying books, adding new books to the collection all the time. Yeah, it's a constant process of adding the new, taking out the old stuff that maybe isn't circulating much anymore, that sort of thing. So we only have a certain amount of space.
Yeah. It's almost like, you know, the old days of having a record shop.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the record shop, you know, would only want to put records that would be bought or sold or used, obviously, in the library situation. So I'm sure you probably have things there that have been up on a shelf at dust as a kitten.
there's some of that, but, you know, there are some of those things
are... try to keep a good flow.
We do, yeah. You're talking, like curating a collection, basically. And so there is a science to it. People do study it in school. I don't myself have a library degree, but it is something that people do study when they get a library degree as far as collection development.
When you were talking about the multiple... things focused in on the eclipse. Even with, you know, we're in year 2024, and I keep thinking back in my younger days, back in fifth grade, we had a science fair, right? And my big deal, and now again, my being in fifth grade and that, we're talking mid-60s, okay?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So we're talking about, you know, back there. And so at my science fair, I was a big fan. I mean, almost giving idol type worship to astronauts.
Sure.
And the space program.
Of course, yeah.
Which was right in its zenith. I mean,
absolutely,
it was
the biggest
thing.
I
think the Gemini programs was running at that point in time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did a science fair on a detailed presentation of the moon.
Mm-hmm.
Just the moon.
Yeah.
And talking, you know, about the name of the various craters and the locations and blah, blah, blah. And I was doing this in 1965, and I was just mesmerized by it.
Mm-hmm.
And the judges came by there, and they were like, they were kind of looking at the presentations where you'd have something like blow up or something, you know, very visual. And mine was more almost like I was like directing a roadmap and explaining the origins or what people thought were the origins
of those diagrams, pictures,
you know. And I was just so you can imagine when they landed on the moon and Neil Armstrong took those first steps, you can bet your sweet dollar as a 14-year-old, I was just like, you know, on the floor.
Glued, of course.
Head glued to the TV because this, my heroes were doing this.
Yeah.
And to people who didn't go through that dramatic part in life. Now they just go, matter of fact, oh, yeah, the moon. Yeah, we've been there. Oh, yeah, we can do it anytime we wanted to. Well, they've had a recent kind of a deal they wanted to, and it didn't work out, so it's not that easy.
Exactly. Yeah.
And you think of
it's constant effort.
You think of the fact that the lunar module that they landed on the moon and that those computers inside that craft and that, the total amount of information and everything fits into your cell phone.
Exactly.
Today.
At your fingertips,
I'm sorry to wax romantically.
But I mean, when people want to look up information like that, and we do have students who come in for History Day projects, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a whole world of our online resources, databases, scholarly journals and magazine articles and there's a lot out there, but it can be hard to sift through and find information that's reliable and how to cite it and all of that. And those are the kinds of things that we're happy to help with. Citing your bibliographies and that sort of thing. Yeah.
Well, again, you're talking about getting information, getting factual information.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these smartphones are really handy to a certain extent.
Sure.
But if you're wanting something that you can get your hands on and something that's, you know, mm-hmm. it's the real thing, you go to your local library and utilize their services.
Yeah, definitely. A lot of our online our resources have moved online, so we don't have as many. Like, probably you went to the library when you were doing your moon research, you know,
and got
big, thick reference books. And so there's some of that out there still, but there's a whole world online that we're happy to point folks to and help navigate and all of that sort of thing. And it doesn't have to be research for a paper. It can be consumer reports or, you know, genealogy research, that sort of thing.
So. And your local library, whether it be the one here downtown Wausau, you know, the hub, I guess would be a way to describe it,
mm-hmm.
or of course the extensions of your is... You know, all locations, I'm sure, are you invite the community
mm-hmm.
to utilize your services. You may want to have something, you know, that maybe the library has helped to put something together.
Sure.
You know, where it either be a discussion or some kind of a presentation.
Yeah.
You'd be willing to help them in that, right?
Yeah,
to some extent.
We do have, for instance, our Wausau location here has meeting rooms and a big community room that outside groups can reserve, same at some of our other locations. Yeah, we're happy to partner with people and provide space. Some of the space we use goes through community, you know, village offices, that sort of thing. But yeah, we're happy to help work with people on programming or even just providing the space at the library, definitely.
If you got a contact number or that, if they want any question?
MCPL.us. You can give our main Wausau location a call, 715-261-7200, and we'll help direct you anywhere you want to go.
Well, Chad Daly of the Marathon County Library, thanks a lot for stopping
in
again for the update.
Thank you so much, Bob. Yeah, it was a pleasure.
And that the stuff about the... The
eclipse stuff.
I'd be very interested in checking that out. So
yeah, and I forgot to mention we'll be handing out eclipse glasses at all of our programs.
Very important.
Very important. Yeah.
You better believe it.
Yeah.
Thanks again.
Thank you.
More coming up. We'll have Senator Chris Larson coming up next break. Bull Falls Radio, WXCO here in Wausau, Wisconsin. My name is Bob Look, sitting in for Chad Holmes. It's Chad Holmes' show. He's taking a little vacation time through tomorrow, Wednesday. And again, I want to thank Chad Daly from the Marathon County Library with the information that he presented there. Right now, we're going to talk a little bit of state business, state of Wisconsin business, and we... decided to go outside our immediate area for a different look at things of how the state assembly, how the state senate, how they fared in their efforts here in 2024, and what we can expect or maybe not expect on what has occurred for the 2024 session. But we went outside the immediate area here, and we got a hold of State Senator Chris Larson, who represents the fine folks in the southeastern part of the state of Wisconsin, southern suburban area. In fact, my former home area, where I was born and raised in South Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And first of all, Senator Larson, greetings and thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me on, Bob. We appreciate it. And thank you for doing South Milwaukee proud with all that you do.
Well, you know, South Milwaukee is... I was born and raised there, a graduate of South Milwaukee High School, and that's my home area. I have to, you know, always admit that. And there's something about, you know, living on Lake Michigan. I don't know what it is, but I really miss it. That during the summertime, if you walk out the door in the middle of summer, real nice sunny day in the 80s, maybe even 90s, but you'd still take a jacket because if you get that east wind, suddenly switch around. Suddenly 30 degrees are gone. So
especially if the wind shifts right in the middle of the day. happens a lot.
Yep. Well, Senator Larson, I just wanted to get your feedback on the session that was. And again, we keep using the past tense because we keep driving home the point that the state assembly and the state senate, you know, they get their work done, and pretty much when they gavel out and call it a day, they don't just call it a day, they call it the rest of the year almost. Some people sometimes have a hard time understanding that, but that's the way the system's set up, isn't it?
Well, yeah, unfortunately it is, that we are in usually on odd-numbered years. We're in for a lot of it. That's when the budget is happening.
Right.
Finished by the end of June, and then it goes for 2 years. So that's the busiest time, is the first 6 months of the odd-numbered years. But then it's a whole other story on even-numbered years, where actually the assembly has been done since February. So they were done within the first 2 months, said they're not coming back. The Senate, we had 2 days in March that we were in, and the second one before we got to a number of material things, including a bill called Right of First Refusal that would have allowed for local contractors to have an advantage in bidding processes from out of state and multinational conglomerates, as well as a whole host of other bills just died at the last minute when suddenly the Republicans grabbed the gavel and hit adjournment, and we were done in a flash without getting to at least a dozen bills.
Yeah, at least a dozen bills, and probably would have been more the longer you would have been there and discussing some possibilities, right?
Right. It was a dozen that were either on the calendar already or ones that we were going to be pulling up for discussion. But yeah, that doesn't even bring into it the number of bills that we did not get a hearing. Of course, folks may be familiar with the fact that 98% of bills introduced by Democrats do not get a hearing at all. And so that means we still have the lowest minimum wage in the entire country, tied for last at $7.25 an hour, while other states nearby us have already moved up. So that also means that we still have, we're still behind on tip differential, where there's actually a lower wage for people who are working in restaurants. We've done little to address child care shortages, both in allowing people to be able to pay the market rate, as well as doing things to make sure that there are more people in that profession. You know, these things, as well as a whole host of others that we just did not get to this session. So I, you know, the joke I keep saying as I go around is, we're done. You know, we've solved all of the problems. Everything's done. You're welcome. And this, I think, the worst one being that we have a $6 billion surplus. And this April 2nd, we have 101 school referendums up around the state trying to make up for the gap in state funding. And you add those all up, and that totals $1.67 billion that they fell short. And I think that's just criminally wrong at a time when we are sitting on a $6 billion surplus and could more than fund that. People are going to see their property taxes go up to cover something we have cash for.
That, to me, it screams at me. It's basically if somebody was standing next to me by about a foot and just screamed in my ear saying, like, wake up. I wish I could do that to the citizens of this state and say, hey, we could actually, you know, keep your property taxes, you know, at reasonable rates. We've got the money in hand right now to at least help the funding that has been basically squeezed and shortened and basically evaporated for our schools, for our local governments, whether it be the city or village or county. It's a spiral of, you know, this mantra of, we want to cut taxes. Well, nobody wants to pay more taxes, but if you have needs that need to be handled, if you're in state government and if you're not helping out your local communities, you're basically hanging them out to dry.
Right. I mean, and this is, the schools came to us, school board members, parents, in some cases, even students themselves came to these budget listening sessions last year around this time and were saying very clearly, look, you have not, the state has not kept up with the pace of inflation, that a student was valued less now than they were 14 years ago adjusting for inflation. And on top of that, special education needs continue to grow. And for folks that aren't familiar with that term, that just means that somebody, it's a student who needs special attention, and there tends to be a higher than average amount of students in public schools. And that's a function of private schools don't have to take these kids and they kick them out, especially those that get vouchers. They get the money and then they push them out into, or guide them out or counsel them out, is how they put it in their parlance. But they end up being public schools, and the schools only get reimbursed for 33% of the costs now. It was 31, so it went up 2%. But private schools who are getting a voucher get 90%. So there's that disparity. If you would make up for that, it would cost the state less than $500 million, but it would mean that schools are not penalized for having students with disabilities, where that teacher is then being pulled away, or instructors are pulled away to make sure that student has what they need, and that might be pulled away from a class that already has 30 students in it. That could have been addressed. The school officials, the parents, all explained this to us, and that we had the money to do it. You know, the usual excuse of walking around with our pockets turned inside out and saying, oh gosh, if only we had the money. We had a $7 billion surplus, and we declined to listen to students and instead gave a huge giveaway to vouchers. And with public schools now, you're seeing a record number.
Chad Holmes Show on Bull Falls Radio, WXCO. And I'm Bob Look, sitting in for the vacationing Chad, as he's getting a little time off out there. And Ian Welsh is our producer on the program. And we're talking to State Senator Chris Larson of the Milwaukee, southern part of Milwaukee area, talking about the state Senate, state assembly. Pretty much done for the year here in 2024, but a lot of things that are kind of left undone. And again, we were talking to the senator about that. And again, we want to thank you for taking the time to visit with us this morning.
Yeah, happy to be on. Thank you again, Bob.
Now let's get back to the business at hand, and that is funding things. Back in 2 years ago, and I ran for the state Senate here for District 29. And part of the most concern, especially with a lot of the voters up in this part of the world, and we're talking about North Central Wisconsin and the 29th district as it was in the gerrymandered way of putting it together, is not that now, but in 2022, if, you know, from my resident, down in the southern part of the district, if I had to visit the furthest part of the district, it was more than a 3-hour drive. Okay. It was a unique little gerrymandering. But, you know, when you talk to the folks, say up in more rural Wisconsin, and I would, ask what are their main concerns. They're always concerned about spending money, on the schools, how much is being spent. And thinking that, say, Milwaukee schools, or in larger cities like in Madison, maybe Green Bay, they got a better deal, or they're getting more money. And we discussed it in these roundtables. And I says, well, you know, the big difference is the school districts up, say, in Hayward, Wisconsin, or up in Ladysmith, Wisconsin, or in Medford, Wisconsin, is a lot different than what things are down in, say, Milwaukee or Madison, where the money that is being used by those school districts is important in a different way to the folks in higher population areas, whereas up north, they're talking about the contracts that they got to do for busing to bring students to the schools, which is a heck of a lot more of an expense because of the mileage that getting students to school and then back home again, as compared to, say, in a bigger city type environment where the population density is important. That's the one thing that people don't take in consideration, that there are you have those same kind of organizations that are trying to balance the bucks, but the bucks have to be balanced differently because of the situations.
Right. And I think, I would go a step further than
sure.
that and say, you know, I do think that there is a community of public schools, and I think that it's of there's a tendency to try and say, these are all so different. And especially to try and alienate and divide and say, well, those urban school districts, those are the real problem. They're the ones pulling all the resources away from your rural school. And this is tried not just, you know, of course, we're familiar with it here in Wisconsin as, you know, beating up on Milwaukee, you know, Tommy Thompson's famous stick it to Milwaukee. But, you know, listeners might be surprised to know that this happens in every state in the country. And it's just it's a common effort to just try and divide people against each other while looting both and shorting both of them while giving away huge tax cuts to the rich. And in this case, as you talked about vouchers earlier, the big thing that people are learning from Wisconsin is that the voucher system is hurting not just the urban schools, but also suburban and rural schools are hurting the most. So even in states like red Texas, they are going against this, Kentucky, because they are watching what has happened in Wisconsin, where 80% of the students who attend a voucher school already were already attending a voucher school when they got a public subsidy to do so. And then on top of that, you know, there was a $10,000 per year per student tax cut, tax write-off for parents who send their kids to a private school. So we're paying for all of this, and those funds are coming out of the dollars that go to public schools. And so in the end, you know, it's harder to recruit teachers. We're seeing that where one in three teachers does not last 5 years. That is not the case before. Less people are going into the profession. There's no guarantees of raises or stability. And so, you know, you talked about going to South Milwaukee, and it was like this when I went to school too. You knew who your seventh grade teacher was by the time you were in third grade because that teacher was there. And, you know, subconsciously, that shows a dedication to those students, that shows accountability to those students, to you when you were, you know, when you were younger. The same thing with students. The more parents, the more adults that they have in their life that are looking after them and stable, the better it is. And you add on top of that, you know, that these cuts are happening. They don't have that stability of having the same teacher, even in the same year. And that tells those students, you're not as valued, and is giving a very clear message to them that you are not valued by these adults, by the adults that are funding the system. And I would say that they're not wrong. But we can change that because we are the people, the 5.9 million people of the state. We should fund these referendums wherever they are. A quarter of the state is going to be up in April, is going to have one of these on their ballot. But then beyond that, we're going to have more this fall. But really, in the meantime, we have to make sure that every legislator understands this and stops wagging their finger and trying to pretend that the solution to public education problems is to cut, and pretend that works. It needs an investment. It needs a deep investment to make sure that we are actually dedicated to fixing it. And this idea that schools should be functioning as a business and therefore we should cut them, schools don't function as business. Schools function as a family. Schools function as a community. And so the same way if somebody in your family or somebody in your community is struggling, you don't wag your finger at them and yell at them and say, all right, well, let's cut them out and maybe then they'll learn. You make sure that they're given extra attention. And that's what we need to do for each and every one of the kids that attends a public school in the state of Wisconsin.
It's your community investment, as would be a good way to describe it. I mean, you're investing to the future people who will be a part of that community.
That's exactly right. You know, it's and if there's a tendency of people to say, you know, and I've already gotten that as I go out and knock on doors, I knock doors all over the state. People say, well, I didn't have that when I was a kid. Like, well, if that slows down, then we're going to have less and less. And I really hope that we could get away from this unfortunate idea that, well, we always have to be looking out for ourselves and screw everybody else and don't leave anything for anybody else thereafter. If you didn't have it, well, then they don't deserve it. And I think that is going to get us into even more trouble if we keep going down that route. And instead are thinking, actually, what does it take to fund a community that thrives? What will it take to make sure that every student succeeds? Because guess what? They are going to be the one, you know, serving your coffee. They're going to be the ones teaching your kids. They're going to be the ones operating machinery on the roads. They're going to be the ones who are going to be your boss. And so we better make sure that we educate them to the best of our ability because, frankly, they're the ones who are going to be running the state in 10, 20 years. So if you're still planning on being alive, well, you want to make sure that you leave the place better than we left it for them.
Oh, doggone right. And, you know, talking about, you know, private schools, public schools, myself, born Catholic, attended a Catholic grade school going from first grade right up through eighth grade. And I can only, you know, just go by my experience of that. Was it a good education? Yes, for the most part. But for me personally, it kind of shorted me on a few things. One of the things was science. when I got to ninth grade or being a freshman in high school, public school, which I then attended, in my younger days, I was so far behind on the science side of things, and also diving into mathematics, there were times where I was like, "Wow, I have no idea what they're talking about." It's like I was having to learn a new language to try to catch up. Now, because the private schools were not tied in with the public schools back then, and they're still not today. Although, financed-wise, it is, which to me I think is just not a smart way of doing things. The public schools need enough money in that to run their side of the story. The private schools are there because people wanted to send their kids to a private school. They had that option, but they'd have to pay it out of their own pocket. Now, it's not that way. And I can see, and I think that you're kind of identifying this collision course that we're having with a brain explosion here where it's just not going to work right.
Right. And there was a lot of different excuses as to why voucher schools really started. There was a lot of promises that were made of saying, the free market, it was a collision of free market principles of, the Chicago school. That said, that yes, by doing this, all schools will benefit by the competition. But what you're doing is you're creating two separate competing school districts, and you're supposed to fund them both. Well, you can see the problem with that from a public perspective, especially when you're giving one a lot of advantages where they can push out students after the third Friday, which is when they count to determine how much funding they will get for the entire year. And then the public schools have to pick up whatever students got kicked out. And then beyond that, the other thing that contributed to vouchers was the segregation movement. It was a continuation of, we don't want those kids in our schools, so we're going to create separate segregation academies that are private. And because they are private, they are not subject to the same constitutional restrictions that public schools are, so they can keep out Black and brown kids. That was done more in the South, but it definitely continued up into Wisconsin. But that is the birth of where vouchers came from, and it has not gotten better over the last 30 years. So we are now funding four separate school districts across the entire state, entire systems of schools And we're not funding adequately the public one, which has the most students, which has 85% of the students in it. And that's a real problem. You know, as I've been a state senator now for 14 years, it continues to baffle me that there is this idea that there is endless scrutiny, endless attacking of public schools, while at the same time saying, well, private schools, they're different because they're private, they're better. We don't need to get in there and figure out what they're doing. We don't need to make sure that they're doing this stuff because they're private while they are benefiting to the tune of billions of dollars. So this is a problem other states, again, have learned from Wisconsin of not to go down this dangerous path. But we have not, unfortunately. And I think a large part of that is, as we're seeing, and we're seeing it right here in my home school district in Milwaukee, where those who fund the voucher schools are now funding the anti-referendum, where they're pushing to have people vote no. So it wasn't enough that they got a huge benefit. Now they want to go in for the kill shot and prevent the public schools from actually making up the gap that was caused by the state, was caused by their lobbying not to fund every school district. So, you know, and you might say, well, in the northwest of the state, well, that's so far away from us. I would add that most people might realize that vouchers started in Milwaukee, but they sure as heck weren't contained here. They went everywhere, and they hurt rural schools. And if Milwaukee cannot hold them off, it is, you know, every local school district, the other 420 school districts in the state, don't stand as much of a chance if they're going to see this type of onslaught of defunding the public schools.
Well, State Senator Chris Larson, we want to thank you for joining us here in the program this morning. And again, this is an issue we got to keep our eyes on. Again, thanks again, and enjoy your day. We'll have more on Bull Falls Radio here in the Chad Holmes Show right after this. Chad Holmes Show here on Bull Falls Radio, WXCO. Bob Look in the seat, giving Chad a little time off. Ian's in the other room. He's doing air guitar. I mean, come on. No, I'm kidding. He's not doing that. In fact, I can't lie to that because we're actually visual, right? Like, people can see us.
They can see us.
They can see. I have to keep reminding myself that because, you know, being in radio since 1974, we didn't have those eyes on us, you know, when we're doing a show, so we could put our feet up on the desk, relax, maybe have a cold brew. Well, my brew is not that. It's Splash. I'm having a little Splash refresher this morning. Mm. Thank you to the was that like open for anyone who could grab it, or did somebody bring this in?
I don't think the chat online.
Okay. I just want to.
He usually buys his own before he comes into work.
Okay. It's just that I forgot my little thermos for the day, and I kind of that kind of screwed up. So
I'm sure it's not the worst thing. It'll be okay.
Okay. All right. Well, if anyone asks, just tell them that you did it. Okay.
I will.
All right. Thanks. Hey, I want to remind you folks too. Please, please, please listen into Civic Media and our programs. Because the chance to be a winner, the Ride into Spring contest, ends this week, but you still have a chance to get yourself registered. Listen each weekday from 7 and 10 a.m. and 1 and 3 p.m. for your chance to win an overnight stay at Chula Vista Resort in Wisconsin Dells. And you can also be entered to win one of two grand prizes that include new bikes, outdoor patio furniture, a blender, and so much more. So do keep tabs on that in Civic Media and check out those shows and check out for your chance to be part of the winners there. By the way, studio line, if you want to get a hold of us, is 715-382-9297. Closing out the show here for today, do want to thank Nancy Stencil, who was with us in our first hour, and having a chat with her. Chad Deli from the Marathon County Library for visiting us. And State Senator Chris Larson, He's a great, great guy, and I've got a chance to chat with him and talk to him. And being from the representing the district there where my old hometown used to be, there's a lot of things that kind of remember, you know. It's that old home deal. So again, thank you to the senator for taking some time. Tomorrow on the program, in case you're thinking, well, gee, what are we going to do tomorrow? Well, we'll be having a little bit of an open line. I am working on the possibility of getting a nice guest with us, but it's we're having a little trouble setting up the times and that stuff. So we'll see if we can pull this off. But one of the ones that I do know we're going to be having on at about 9:30 tomorrow. Baseball season is just around the corner. The Brewers start their season for real Thursday. Out in New York against the Mets. But we're going to look at baseball a little differently tomorrow, because we're going to talk to one of the people that help put people onto the field to perform those things that we thought we could do as kids or don't have the ability to do, like hit a baseball or throw out a runner, you know, from catcher to second. A professional baseball scout is going to be our guest. I've known this gentleman for many years, but he's a current major league scout for the Boston Red Sox. So
fantastic.
And he's been doing this since the 80s, okay? Mm. In fact, he even runs clinics and that to help teach people how to be a scout, what to look for, you know, what to bring along, what to say, how to, you know, get the word out there. And he's got some great stories. And we're going to talk about what it's like to be, and it's not an easy job, folks. Mm-hmm. You think, oh, great, just sit and watch baseball games. Yeah, but there's a lot more to it.
It's a little more complicated than that.
I think you're going to get a real rude awakening that it's not that easy of a job. You might have seen some of those movies where you see these scouts and that one movie with Clint Eastwood, and look out for the curveball or trying to hit the curveball. I can't remember the title of the movie, but Clint Eastwood plays the part of a old elderly baseball scout, and it's pretty decent movie. But I'll tell you what, my friend Carl, he'll be a guest with us tomorrow at 9:30. So if you're looking for a little insight on professional football, baseball, I should say, professional baseball, that's what you can be tuned in for tomorrow. And again, we'll be working on a few things. We've got a lot of great programming coming up in Civic Media later on today, all the way to Devil's Advocates. We come rolling in at 4 till 6 p.m. coming up later on this afternoon. I'm sure they'll have plenty to talk about. I know there's a lot of big stories that are happening right now. I know in Baltimore they've had that freight boat collide with a bridge outside of Baltimore.
Oh, I saw that.
Oh
video.
My that gosh! Was, this morning I saw that.
That was nuts.
You know, and that collapsed it, and there's going to be multiple injuries and possibly fatalities. More often than probably fatalities. Keeping an eye on that story. That's one that to keep an eye on, and also the fact. Let's see, sports wise, I'm thinking. We got the Bucks playing tonight. Mm-hmm. They play in the Los Angeles Lakers. So if you're into that, more power to you. So whatever you got planned for this Tuesday, I'm looking. I can actually see out our window here, and I don't see it raining. Is that? Yeah, it is not raining. It was pouring. We pulled in this morning, but it's not raining now.
It's coming down pretty good. Well, I woke up this morning.
Yep. But according to our meteorologist, Brittany Merlot, look out tonight. Getting down to the teens.
Yeah, it's going to freeze over. And that's going to be slippery.
Yeah, so what I can emphasize more than anything else, if you happen to have your car that has to be parked outside with all this rain and that stuff, make sure that your light or your locks don't freeze up on you and you can't open your door.
Exactly.
You know, because of that change in the weather, with all the weather and the wetness in the past day or so. So, but anyway, we hope you have yourself a great Tuesday. And just by the way, if you got a birthday on this date, you're sharing it with people like Diana Ross, who's 79 years old. Kenny Chesney, country singer, 55 years old. Oh. Nancy Pelosi from the U.S. House of Representatives, 83 years old for her. And Martin Short is 73 years old today.
A very funny guy.
Yes.
Very
funny. Enjoy the day, folks, and we'll talk to you tomorrow. Sitting in for Chad. This is the Chad Holmes Show on Bulls Falls Radio, 98.9 FM, 1230 AM, WXCO. Have a great day.
Happy Tuesday, everybody.